30 new drugs to treat HIV/AIDS. Dr. Fauci called this extraordinary accomplishment one of the most important transformative discoveries in biological sciences. These drugs generated billions of dollars in revenue for drug makers. In 2000, global revenue from AIDS remedies was $4 billion. By 2004, it jumped to $6.6 billion. In 2010, AIDS drugs cracked the $9 billion mark for pharmaceutical giants and topped $30 billion in 2020. On the surface of AIDS, what the public sees is a benevolent exterior devoted to saving lives of originally mostly gay men in the West, then, since they shifted the narrative, primarily Africans. A global apparatus now worth over $2 trillion and composed of more NGOs, more organizations than anybody could count, obliterates all dissent, all real language, history, and truth, says Celia Farber, author of Serious Adverse Events, An Uncensored History of AIDS. It's a beast system, and Fauci created it. It's not capitalism at all. It detests merit, standards, and all the values of Western civilization. It uses the violence of the woke economy to recast lies as truth and to proudly crush and block any and all dissenting voices. It does this always in the name of saving lives. Only now, with COVID, are Americans able to see Fauci's cold, ruthless face behind the mask. Americans have tried to follow what that man has said for a year and a half now, and we who have been dealing with him for so long, we feel like, welcome to our nightmare. Nothing he says makes sense, yet nobody stands over him to rein him in. Tower of Babel. Americans are trying to make him into a benign figure, but more and more they feel a sinking feeling. Is he a madman? Why can't we understand what he is actually saying, what he means? This is very unsettling when people are as afraid as people are now, since COVID. Aftermath. A key and enduring legacy of the AZT battle was Dr. Fauci's emergence as the alpha wolf of HHS. His enormous budget and multiplying contacts on Capitol Hill, the White House, and the medical industry thereafter allowed him to influence or ignore a succession of politically appointed HHS directors and to bully, manipulate, and dominate HHS's other sister agencies, most notably FDA. In his biography of Dr. Fauci, author Terry Michael described the drug approval system that NIAID nurtured post-AZT. What has evolved into the HIV/AIDS industry is supported by a knowledge monopoly comprised of federal government bureaucratic authorities led by Dr. Anthony Fauci, who hands out billions of dollars in research grants, who collude with crony capitalists from international pharmaceutical cartels, who distribute billions to AIDS advocacy nonprofits, and whose official stories are communicated to the public by a science-illiterate mass media. With few exceptions, it is a media populated by journalists who don't even attempt to understand the science. These journalistic interpreters of those they label scientists are pawns in the hands of authorities in long-sleeved white laboratory coats. That chief authority about HIV/AIDS, Dr. Fauci, has tightly held the purse strings on all HIV/AIDS research since he was appointed head of the NIAID in November 1984. As Michael suggests, the unique skill sets that allowed Dr. Fauci's extraordinary longevity and continuing public credibility, despite his miserable record of preventing and managing chronic and infectious disease, were his gifts for weaponizing media relationships, magically deploying journalists to promote his self-serving narratives, and relentlessly silence dissent. Dissent was effectively shut down in mass-mediated public discourse, Michaels observes, and it was scrubbed from peer-reviewed science and medical journals, which reap significant revenue from drug company advertisements for antiretroviral drugs. Journal revenue is also derived from expensive annual subscriptions purchased with funds from tens of thousands of HIV/AIDS-related grants funded by U.S. taxpayers, if approved by Anthony Fauci. Template. His success at using the AIDS crisis to bring a deadly, toxic, and ineffective AIDS drug to market taught Dr. Fauci some key career lessons that he would faithfully repeat again and again and again throughout his long regime. During his battle to win FDA approval for AZT, Dr. Fauci pioneered the strategies upon which he would build his career and then showcase for the world during the COVID epidemic. These include pumping up pandemic fears to lay the groundwork for larger budgets and greater powers, incriminating an elusive pathogen, fanning hysteria by exaggerating disease transmissibility, periodically stoking waning fear levels by warning of mutant superstrains and future surges, suggesting substantial changes in how people live, ostensibly to save their lives, keeping the public and politicians engaged through confusing and contradictory pronouncements, using faulty PCR and antibody tests, and manipulating epidemiology to inflate non-verifiable case and death numbers to maximize the perception of an imminent calamity, ignoring and dismissing effective off-the-shelf therapeutic remedies, directing energy and money toward profitable new patented drugs and vaccines, championing dangerous and ineffective drugs originating in government laboratories as the only winning solution to end the pandemic, funding and orchestrating confirmation-biased research to validate his chosen remedy, partnering with large pharmaceutical companies and giving his partners advantages in the race for approval, allowing preferred companies to skip key testing metrics, curtailing clinical trials to conceal severe safety and efficacy problems, sabotaging, discrediting, and sweeping aside more effective therapies, antiretrovirals, off-the-shelf remedies, and non-patentable medicines that might compete with his new patented antiretrovirals and vaccines, subjecting competitive products to efficacy and safety studies that are designed to fail, allowing thousands of sick patients to suffer and die by denying them access to demonstrably effective competitive remedies, by publicly protesting the existing remedies were not subject to randomized placebo testing, controlling the key independent committees, DSMB, VRBPAC, ACIP, that approve and mandate new drugs by populating them with his own hand-picked PIs, presenting these agencies as independent and trustworthy experts, using the emergency use authorization to fast-track the concoctions through a rigged approval process to market, using official government propaganda to market his concoctions, employing science by press release to control narratives, making exaggerated claims for the efficacy of his products, using pervious and ineffective post-marketing surveillance systems to conceal mass injuries and deaths from the public, papering over all these testing deficiencies by crafting and promoting enduring narratives about the benefits, safety, and efficacy, citing leading experts to promote hypotheses that are practically never scientifically verified with peer-reviewed studies or appropriate controls, allowing pharmaceutical companies to charge Medicare, government programs, and insurance companies inflated prices bearing no relationships to cost, ensuring that research funding is restricted to projects supporting the dogma excluding research into alternative hypotheses. Preventing debate and censoring dissenting voices in popular media, social media, and scientific publications, and promising ultimate salvation with vaccines. In addition, Dr. Fauci honed the skill of always speaking with authority, even when making contradictory assertions with no scientific basis, to rapidly reshape all government pronouncements into dogma, efficiently perpetuated in a quasi-religious manner by the media. By repeatedly using these formulas for 50 years, Fauci directed his agency away from its core responsibility, basic research on infectious, allergic, and autoimmune diseases that have become epidemic since he took over NIAID, and transformed his agency into a profit-making appendage for itself and for Big Pharma. Mark Twain once observed that it's easier to fool people than to convince them that they have been fooled. AIDS activist Christine Maggiore lamented this feature of human gullibility when she assessed the mendacious 50-year travesty of corrupted public health research that Tony Fauci put in motion during the 1984 AIDS crisis. Commercial interests are definitely part of the problem here, and it's also our collective inability or challenge to say, all this time, all these years, all these lives, all these billions and billions of dollars, can we just stop a second and go back to the very beginning and make sure we got this right? I mean, that is so hard to do. People don't even know it's a lie. It's not so much a lie as business as usual. Please go to the Children's Health Defense website for the acknowledgments and notes by chapter, updates to data, and new information that becomes available on any of the subject matter covered in this audiobook. Chapter 5, The HIV Heresies. A man living outside the circle of delusion, which imprisons most men, has a question of everyone he meets, usually asked silently. Can you get outside of yourself for even a split second to hear something you have never heard before? Those who learn to hear will enter a new world. Khalil Gibran. I hesitated to include this chapter because any questioning of the orthodoxy that HIV is the sole cause of AIDS remains an unforgivable, even dangerous heresy among our reigning medical cartel and its media allies. But one cannot write a complete book about Tony Fauci without touching on the abiding and fascinating scientific controversy over what he characterizes as his greatest accomplishment and his life's work. From the outset, I want to make clear that I take no position on the relationship between HIV and AIDS. I include this history because it provides an important case study illustrating how, some 400 years after Galileo, politics and power continue to dictate scientific consensus rather than empiricism, critical thinking, or the established steps of the scientific method. It is a hazard to both democracy and public health when a kind of religious faith in authoritative pronouncements supplants disciplined observation, rigorous proofs, and reproducible results as the source of truth in the medical field. While consensus may be an admirable political objective, it is the enemy of science and truth. The term settled science is an oxymoron. The admonishment that we should trust the experts is a trope of authoritarianism. Science is disruptive, irreverent, dynamic, rebellious, and democratic. Consensus and appeals to authority, be it CDC, WHO, Bill Gates, Anthony Fauci, or the Vatican, are features of religion, not science. Science is tumult. empirical truth generally arises from the tilled, agitated, and upturned soils of debate. Doubt, skepticism, questioning, and dissent are its fertilizers. Every great scientific advance in history, every transformative idea, from evolution to heliocentrism to relativity, met initial ridicule from the panjandrums of scientific consensus. As novelist and physician Dr. Michael Crichton observed, consensus is the business of politics. Science, on the contrary, requires only one investigator who happens to be right, which means that he or she has results that are verifiable by reference to the real world. In science, consensus is irrelevant. The greatest scientists in history are great precisely because they broke with the consensus. There is no such thing as consensus science. If it's consensus, it isn't science. If it's science, it isn't consensus. Period. Specifically, the original hypothesis on AIDS is an illustration of how vested interests, in this case Dr. Anthony Fauci, using money, power, position, and influence, can engineer consensus on incomplete theories and then ruthlessly suppress dissent. The many thoughtful critics of Dr. Fauci's central canon offer various plausible but wildly divergent alternatives to the official orthodoxy that HIV alone causes AIDS. There is one issue upon which they all agree. During the 36 years since Dr. Fauci and his colleague, Dr. Robert Gallo, first claimed that HIV is the sole cause of AIDS, no one has been able to point to a study that demonstrates their hypothesis using accepted scientific proofs. The fact that Dr. Fauci has obstinately refused to describe a convincing scientific basis for his proposition, or to debate the topic with any qualified critics, including the many Nobel laureates who have expressed skepticism, makes it even more important to give air and daylight to dissenting voices. Even today, incoherence, knowledge gaps, contradictions, and inconsistencies continue to bedevil the official dogma. The unified chorus demanding blind adherence to that official dogma drowned out the lively public disputes of earlier years and ignored the clamor for scientific proof. An obsequious national media had consecrated the orthodoxy and anointed Anthony Fauci with an infallibility formerly reserved for popes. In the February 28, 1994 issue of New York Native, Nina Ostrom wrote an editorial titled "The Canonization of Anthony Fauci." Anthony Fauci, the man who has so mangled and misdirected U.S. AIDS research that 13 years into the epidemic there is no clear idea of its pathogenesis and no effective treatment, was recently raised to near sainthood once again by the New York Times. Instead of responding to critics by answering common sense inquiries, Dr. Fauci has cultivated a theology that denounces questioning of his orthodoxy as irresponsible, uninformed, and dangerous heresy. It's axiomatic that American democracy thrives on the free flow of information and abhors censorship, so Dr. Fauci's extraordinary capacity to ruthlessly silence, censor, ridicule, defund, and ruin prominent dissidents seems more congruent with the Spanish Inquisition or with Soviet and other totalitarian systems. Today, the First Amendment simply does not apply to Tony Fauci, says Charles Ortleb. Any scientist who disputes his official cosmology or any of the canons that promote the orthodoxy that HIV is the one and only cause of AIDS is dead in terms of the rewards and sustenance of science. Finally, many of the tactics Dr. Fauci has pioneered to dodge debate bedazzling and bamboozling the press into ignoring legitimate inquiry of the credo, and undermining, gaslighting, punishing, bullying, intimidating, marginalizing, vilifying, and muzzling critics have become his mainstays for derailing skepticism about his mismanagement of subsequent pandemics, including COVID. So, without attempting to draw conclusions about the underlying HIV-AIDS disputes, it is worth reviewing the weapons Dr. Fauci honed during his natal struggle to construct and fortify a scientific theology. The loudest, most influential, and persistent challenge to the thesis that HIV might not be the only cause of AIDS came from Dr. Peter Duisberg, who in 1987 enjoyed a reputation as the world's most accomplished and insightful retrovirologist. Specifically, Dr. Duisberg accuses Dr. Fauci of committing mass murder with AZT, the deadly chemical concoction that, according to Duisberg, causes and never cures the constellations of immune suppression that we now call AIDS. But Duisberg's critique goes deeper than his revulsion for AZT. Duisberg argues that HIV does not cause AIDS, but is simply a free rider common to high-risk populations who suffer immune suppression due to environmental exposures. While HIV may be sexually transmittable, Duisberg argues, AIDS is not. Duisberg famously offered to inject himself with HIV-tainted blood, so long as it doesn't come from Gallo's lab. For starters, Duisberg points out that HIV is seen in millions of healthy individuals who never develop AIDS. Conversely, there are thousands of known AIDS cases in patients who are not demonstrably infected with HIV. Dr. Fauci has never been able to explain these phenomena, which are inconsistent with the pathogenesis of any other infectious disease. Many other prominent and thoughtful scientists have offered a variety of well-reasoned hypotheses to explain these baffling fissures in the HIV orthodoxy. Most of these alternative conjectures accept that HIV plays a role in the onset of AIDS, but argue that there must be other cofactors, a qualifier that Dr. Fauci and a handful of his diehard PIs stubbornly deny. Prior to advancing his own theory for the etiology of AIDS, Duisberg methodically laid out the logical flaws in Dr. Fauci's HIV-AIDS hypothesis in a groundbreaking 1987 article in Cancer Research. Dr. Fauci has never answered Duisberg's common sense questions. In his subsequent book, Inventing the AIDS Virus, Duisberg, in 724 riveting pages, expands his dissection of the hypothesis's flaws and outlines his own explanation for the etiology of AIDS. For those subsumed in the theology that HIV is the sole cause of AIDS, Dr. Duisberg's critiques seem so outlandish that they automatically debase anyone who even considers them. It's telling, then, to discover how much traction his arguments have among the world's most thoughtful and brilliant scientists, including many Nobel laureates, perhaps most notably Luc Montagnier, who first isolated HIV. To date, Dr. Fauci has been able to silence, but not to answer or to refute, Duisberg's thesis. I restate that I take no side in this dispute. It seems undeniable to me that the dissidents have raised legitimate queries that should be researched, debated, and explored. I believe public health officials have a duty to answer these sort of questions, and I yearn to hear those arguments in an energized debate. Dr. Fauci's aggressive censorship campaign and his refusal to debate arouse my suspicion and my ire. It brings to mind George R. R. Martin's observation that entrenched powers removed men's tongues not to prevent them from telling lies, but to stop them from speaking the truth. If any of Dr. Duesberg's revelations are solid, his story has momentous relevance today, as the removal of his tongue illustrates the capacity of the pharmaceutical cartel, in league with self-interested technocrats, to exaggerate and exploit